Good morning, sir. Before we get started, what is your name, sir?
James Ray Hunter.
Okay, Mr. Hunter, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse will conduct your hearing, so just hold on to the phone. She'll be with you shortly, sir.
Good morning. Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Could you please restate your full name and your ABC number for the record?
James Ray Hunter, DOC number 038313.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and this is for a parole hearing, and the types of parole we'd be considering would be parole to a consecutive sentence or absolute discharge today, sir. You became eligible for these last July 13th of 2018. I'd like to introduce you to the board. If you look on the screen to the other end of the bench from me, so you're right. At the very end is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Next to him, the Honorable David Neal. Next to me here in the middle is our board chair, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. And my name's Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing.
Okay, sir? I can't see the guy at the end.
You can't see him at the end?
No.
Is the camera pointed?
No.
No, it's okay. He's on our screen. There's nobody to my right. There's nobody sitting over here on the very end next to
right.
me today. Okay, well,
okay.
He's showing on our screen, so. Okay. We'll go on ahead, Mr. Hunter. I'd like to just start with a summary. And I'll just maybe pause and ask you periodically if I have this correct. I think I do, though. It looks like you're 62. Are you 62 now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you're serving 25 years to life for the crime of murder in the first degree. And it looks like you have three prior sentences that are expired. You had a theft for 7.5 years and 2 armed robbery convictions for 21 years, each of those. And those were all expired now. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so what remains is the murder first degree that you're currently serving, and then there's a consecutive murder first degree. And that one is also for 25 years to life. Is that as you understand it, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. These crimes occurred on September 21st, 1991. About how old were you, sir, when that happened? Do you remember?
34.
You were 34? Okay. And you were convicted by jury trial on August 11th of 94 and sentenced on October 24th of 94. Did you appeal your conviction, sir? We don't have any evidence you did, but...
Yes, I appealed it.
You did appeal, and it was the convictions were upheld, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. It looks like you have a criminal history. It looks dating back to, looks like about 1975, with attempted burglary. It looks like you got a misdemeanor kind of probation for that, and then that was... Probation was revoked, and did you go to prison for 1 to 3 years on that one, I think?
In 1978, yes, ma'am.
In 78, uh-huh. And then there's a burglary for which you got 5 years probation and some jail time. A stolen property, and you got probation for that, but that was then revoked. There's a burglary, I think you went to prison for that, a probation violation, a parole violation. There's a theft for which you received 5 years, a shoplifting, jail time, possession of narcotics, 2 years, it looks like, either prison or jail, an assault, you went to jail, a fugitive of justice warrant out of New Mexico. Did you ever resolve that warrant, sir?
I haven't been able to get, I went to court on it, I was sentenced on it, and 1993.
Right.
And then Arizona came back in, was it 1993? Yes, I was sentenced on in 1993.
Okay.
And then Arizona months later came back and refiled this case. This case got through our court in 1992.
Okay. Well, was this showing that you still have a detainer from the U.S. Marshals out of New Mexico? And the date of that is 1998, but they were probably just putting it, they just have the detainer there on file for you, for that charge. Okay, sir. So, and then I'm looking at your prison history, your discipline history. It looks like you've had 8 majors. Now, how long have you been in prison, sir? How many years?
Almost 26 years.
Almost 26. So 8 majors over 26 years. I mean, we see a lot of people with discipline history, and 8 is about moderate. You know, it's not one of the better ones, but it's also not, definitely not the worst. So it looks like Dale Rittenhouse.
Okay, the Honorable Miss Rittenhouse.
Yes, sir.
I don't think I have 8 majors from this.
All right. Well, in total, your total prison time.
Okay, well, that would be from 1978 to now, then. If they talk about 8 majors, I don't have 8 majors, so on this then.
Yeah, I see one in 78, 82, 82, 85, yeah. So you're really, overall, you are doing very well. 2000, there was a major, 2003, and 2012. That's all of them. So really, you are doing well. It looks like you were maybe a little rowdier when you were younger, and that usually happens. People figure out how to behave and how to get along on the yard. So we definitely commend you for that, for your behavior. Looks like your last prison, or your last discipline was back in 2014. There's one that was informally resolved in October, or no, I'm sorry, December. That was for contraband, some contraband issue.
Yeah, and a cigarette lighter.
Oh, a cigarette lighter.
That was wrong.
Okay. And then you have a couple, one in May of 2014 and one in May of 2013. Those were both minors, rule violations. I'm not sure what, but I don't know if you remember. Probably don't even remember.
One was being out of place. The other one, I think, was having another inmate's paperwork. I was helping him on his case.
Okay, sure. So it's not big things. We're not talking about assaults or anything serious. So
no.
Minor things. Thank you, sir. It looks like you did receive parole way back on another sentence back in 1985. You were granted parole, and it looks like you were released released to the streets back in 85.
Yes, in 1985, yes, ma'am. I finished that parole.
Okay, and you did okay. You did all right on parole.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you spend it? Yeah, were you here in Arizona, or did you go somewhere else to finish that?
No, I was here in Arizona.
You were here? Do you have family here, or, you know, are you from somewhere else, or are you from here?
No, all my family's here. I have sisters, brothers, my mother passed on in 2009. I have brothers and sisters here. I have a 42-year-old daughter, a 26-year-old daughter, a 25-year-old son. I have a 23-year-old grandson, 22-year-old grandson, a 21-year-old granddaughter, a 16-year-old granddaughter, and I have 2 great granddaughters.
Wow, I'm impressed that you can remember all their ages, and it's hard to keep track of them sometimes, isn't it? Yeah.
You
have a good memory, that's for sure. Do you stay in touch with them? Do you write to them, or do they visit you?
All of that. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well, good. Oh, I'm so glad. That's always good. That helps things a lot. That helps a great deal. We don't have any letters from me. I don't think we have any letters. Let me look. Maybe we do. I didn't make note that we had any letters in particular. Is there a reason why they didn't send us any letters on your behalf? Or?
Well, the last time I appeared here last year, it was on such short notice I didn't get a chance to get any.
Oh, okay. Well, they can write the letters any time. They can write them and send to the board and put your name and your number on it. And what our staff will do is put it in your file. So then when your next hearing comes up, then the letters will be there.
Okay.
So if any time we want to ask them to do that, we always take those, you know, into consideration. But I'm really glad that you stay in touch with your family, because that's very important. Okay. Let's see, what else? It looks like you have completed some programming. You've got cultural diversity, Did you finish your GED or work on your GED? What happened with that?
I did that. Well, I came in and I taught GED for about a year and a half, 2 years. I taught math. And then in 2004, 2005, they told me I need to go ahead and continue teaching. I need to get my GED, so I completed that in about 4 months.
Wow, so you're really good at math, and so you were helping others?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. But now you've got your GED. Okay.
And I took some classes out of Rio Salado, horticulture, and some classes, a class out of Pima Community College also.
Okay. It looks like, yeah, what, you took horticulture and parenting? Did you take parenting some?
Yes, ma'am.
Sometime or another? And smoking cessation, did you manage to stay stopped?
I stopped smoking in 1997.
Good for you. Good for you. I hear that's pretty hard to do. Let's see, what else? Thinking for a change, it looks like some substance abuse class. Had you, you said you don't use drugs, though. You hadn't had a drug problem?
No, ma'am. I just took every class that they allowed me to. They limited us on classes because I had the two life sentences, and they said they were trying to get all the people that were short times program.
Right. Yeah, and that makes sense. And, you know, it's kind of not fair, but they only have limited resources, so they try to spread it as thin as they can. Okay, sir, now we haven't really talked about the crime itself, but I wonder if you could tell us what happened that day, the day of the crime, and what was going on in your life. Fill us in. Tell us, why would you do a thing like that? And what happened?
Well, at my last year, I didn't really get to speak about it because the Honorable Michael Johnson basically presided over the hearing. And as you probably know by now, he's my cousin, and one of the victims in the case was my cousin. And so he kind of used his position there to retaliate against me, so I didn't really get to say much about the case. I was trying to explain to him at the time that I was informed for Detective Thomas Mullen, a Phoenix Police Department, over the robbery detail, and that was one of his co-workers. And at the time I was trying to explain to him, to the board last year, he jumped in and said, well, he basically called me a liar, and he said he knew Detective Mullen, and that Detective Mullen would be involved in something like that and all that kind of stuff. But then at the same time, he didn't know that Detective Mullen was investigating, you know, our cousin Todd either. But at the time, I just came back to California. I did 2 years, you were speaking about the 2 year sentence that I did in California for getting caught in the LAX airport. I had some cocaine on me.
Okay.
And so they gave me a 2 year sentence. That was in 1997. And I got out in 1998. But during that period of time, I lost my license because I had traffic tickets in Casa Grande. And I didn't get to appear in court on them. So when I come back in 1998, they had suspended my license. I had about $2,000 in fines, and I couldn't afford to pay them. And so I continued driving, and every time I get caught, they would suspend my license for an additional year. And so by that time, I think I had about 4 or 5 years worth of extended suspension where I couldn't get my license at all. And so I got arrested one time. One day I got arrested, and I was sitting in jail, and I called a friend of mine, Dan Field, to see if he could help me bail out. And he told me he had the money, but he said he was a detective that would help me if I could give him some information on robberies. And so I called Detective Mullen, and I had Field contact him too. He came down to the jail, and he visited with me, and then he told me, and I told him what I knew, and he told me he was really interested in that, gave me his card, and he told me to contact him when I got out. This was around October of 1990. And so when I got out, he told me to keep in contact with him weekly, let him know what's going on. And so I began to feed him information and stuff about, you know, robberies he did and stuff. And that went all the way to about the summer of 1991. And then by then, he told me, he said, this is all fine and dandy if you're going to come to court and testify. I told him I was willing to testify in the trial. And so then he told me, well, in that case, what I need to know is either ahead of time when he get ready to commit the robberies or either immediately afterwards so that we can run in on him and cash in with some of the proceeds from the robberies. And so keeping that in mind, then he told me, then I told him, I said, well, I'm not that, I'm close with him, but I'm not that close with him when I'm always around and where I know everything they're doing immediately. And particular day of the robbery, that week, that Thursday night, we went to the VFW Club, which is a black social club in Central Phoenix off of Jackson 16th Street, and we all partied, because that's what they would do. There was a crew of them, Sherman Crawford, Anthony Hughes, Todd Johnson, Jimmy Hamilton, he's deceased now, and who else was in the crew? Those were the main crew members, though. But they would get together every week and they would party at one of the clubs, even the Jockey Club, which was partying a lot back then off of Central Camelback or the VFW in Central Phoenix on Jackson, or either the Elks Club on 7th Street off of Buckeye. And so that particular night I went down to the VFW with them, and that was on a Thursday night. And then that Friday night, I went there Friday evening, I went by Crawford's house. He lived in an apartment off of 23rd Avenue Attorney. And Johnson happened to live over there too. And at the time, I didn't know that Johnson was my cousin, even though I knew that Michael Johnson was my cousin. And I knew his, I actually knew Todd Johnson's mother, Miss Billy Johnson. I knew she was my cousin, and I knew Todd Johnson's sister, Carolyn and Twinkie, but I never met Todd. But the day I went over to my to Sherman's house, and I took my nephew Graylin with me. Graylin knew Todd. So when we walked up, he was like, "Hey, kidfo, what's up?" And I'm like, "Well," I said, "you know Todd?" He said, "Yeah, that's our cousin." I said, "Is that right?" He said, "Yeah, that's Tweaky's brother." And so at that point, that's when I first found out that Todd was related to me. And so then Todd asked me, would I help him move that next day, because his girlfriend Lily just got a Section 8 house off of 44th Street in Southern. And so he asked me, would I come to help him move that morning, that Saturday morning. I told him, if you call me, wake me up, I'll come by and help you move. So he called me that Saturday morning. I got up and I went over to his apartment. He had the U-Haul already. We loaded it up. We moved all the stuff over there to her house. And we went to Subway, ate. That was around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Then we went back to the apartment because they still had some stuff in the apartment. And his Cadillac was still at the apartment. And so, and also my vehicle was at the apartment. So we go back to the apartment, and he had the rest of his stuff, and he put his Cadillac and stuff, then his Cadillac wouldn't start. So then I took him to store in my trunk, we'd drop it off at your house, you know. So he threw most of his personal clothes, and he had a few weapons and stuff, he threw them in the trunk and stuff, and right about that time, little David Hughes came over, which was the other victim. I didn't know David. David was a friend of Todd Johnson. Okay, that was the first day I met David. And so David Hughes came by the apartment and stuff. And then Todd, he told me, he said, "Hey man," he said, "man, we need some money." And I said, "Well," I said, "what do you need money for?" He said, "he wanted to buy his children brand new, some bedroom furniture, because the furniture that was in the apartment was raggedy. He didn't want to take that to the new house." Okay. So I said, "Well, I'll loan you $1,000, you know." I said, that's all I can spare right now. He said, "No," he said, "I need more than that. I need my own money." He said, "I'll tell you what, just drop me off over here off of 19th Avenue. I know where Lick at. A Lick is basically, what's it called? It's a hustle. It's like a place where I can get some money." Huh? So he said, "Drop me off over here off of 19th Avenue, down back." And I'm like, "What?" He said, "Drop me." I said, "Man, I told you I'll loan you $1,000. He said, "Man, look here. Careful, just drop me off over here." And so I got to thinking about Detective Mullen and stuff. And I'm like, man, it was really a messed up position, because I just found out that Todd was my cousin, but then also I was obligated to Detective Mullen as a CI. So I said, "Look here, man." I said, "I'll tell you what." I said, "I'll drop you off." And at that point, Dave said, "Look here, man, can I go too? He asked him, Todd. So I said, "Come on." And so then I went, so then he got in the car and stuff, and I took him around off the 1911 coach. I pulled up in the parking spot, they got out the car, I backed off, and I drove off. And even the guy that shot him, Mike Christopher, I think that was his name, Michael Christopher, but even in his report, he told the police that I pulled in, I dropped him off, and I left. And when I left, I went down close to the 21st Avenue, and I turned and I crossed Camelback. My mindset was to go and call Detective Mullen. So I went down, I crossed Camelback, drove down to Campbell, because Campbell's a block north of Turney, where Todd had been with that. So I drove down to Campbell, went back to 19th Avenue and Circle K there, and then but the phone booth was busy, and we didn't have cell phones back then like they do now. So then I drove after the phone booth was busy at said, okay, so then I drove back up to Camelback right down on 9th Avenue. They had a 7-Eleven on the southeast corner. I pulled up in 7-Eleven. As soon as I pulled up, I started seeing all these emergency vehicles flying, sirens and everything flying. They turned on 19th Avenue, they going down by coach and stuff. And I'm looking down there and I'm like, what the heck, you know what I'm saying? And because Ty said they were going to just run back to the house because it was only like 7 blocks from where he lived at the apartment on Trinity that he was just moving out of. And so I'm like, what the hell? I'm really concerned. I'm looking at all these police part, nothing unusual about that, okay? They robbed this store, okay? But then I'm seeing paramedics and everything flying over there, you know? And so I called and checked the mother's number this Saturday evening, spot. It's 4 o'clock, 3, 4 o'clock, somewhere around there. And I dialed his number. I had a number. I said, I'm calling you every week. So I dialed his number at the 620 West Washington Station. And his answering service come home. He's not in. And so I hang up the phone. Then I said, let me get the hell out of here. I just jumped in my car and I took off down Camelback East. I went all the way to the 51. And then I got on the 51, took it south, got on the I-10, and
so
I went to 40th Street.
Mr. Hunter, let me just interrupt you. Is this the day of the crime that we're talking about? This is September 20th.
Oh, this isn't. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Could we just, how was it that you, because no one can fault you for not remembering detail. I must tell you, sir, you know a lot of details about, lots of people can't remember all of this, but you remember it very well. So how did you come to be, the information we have says that you were the driver of the getaway vehicle. How did that come around? I mean, take us a little fast forward.
That is what they charged me with being a getaway driver, but everybody at the scene said that I dropped them off and left.
So you dropped them off. Okay.
In fact, I think I put Michael Christopher's report in there. He's a man that shot him. He said that he was in the parking lot. I pulled up, they got out of my car, I drove off.
So who was it that was...
I wasn't even there when they got killed.
Did you have co-defendants in this matter?
Just those two.
It would be Todd Johnson and David Hughes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, those were your co-defendants. And are they in prison? Do you know?
No, those are the two victims that died.
Oh, these are the two that died, okay.
Yeah, they got killed at the scene. They're trying to rob the place.
Okay, got it. Okay, sir. Oh, I see that now. Thank you. Okay, so you were then, how long were you taken into custody?
Later on that night, I was with my girlfriend, I was Jackie, and I was looking at TV, and I seen the 8 o'clock news flash. They always tell about the stories coming on at 9 o'clock, and they were showing about would-be robbers killed in an attempted robbery.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at it, and I see the 19,000 codes of location.
Uh-huh.
So I asked her to ask her what the police use her car. And so she went out of mother's car key, and I told her, she didn't know where we was going. I told her, just drive me, I need you to drive me somewhere. And I had her take me all the way to the location, and we drove by there, and I seen all the police cars and yellow crime scene tape.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen who I finally figured out was Johnson laying out there on the sidewalk in front of the store.
Mm-hmm.
With his sheet over him, but his legs and his black Nike tennis shoes were hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I couldn't really tell, so I told him, when we passed the location, I told her, turn around, drive back by that again. So then when she drove back by that time, I took her out, told her, slow down. I looked and I realized that, what up, Johnson? So then I basically just broke down.
Yeah. Because you realized then that they had been involved in this thing. So did you turn yourself in, sir?
No, I went over to my cousin Janet's house. I didn't know what to do.
Okay. All right, sir.
So I went over to my cousin Janet's house because I wanted to get in contact with this Billy Johnson. And I didn't know her address. Home.
Understood. Understood. It's difficult. That's okay, sir. It's difficult to talk about. So you...
I didn't know her address, but I didn't know what I was going to tell her. But I feel like I need to let her know that Toddy got himself that he was dead, you know? And so my cousin Janice, she didn't even know the exact physical address, but she told me the approximate location. She told me it was off of 46th Street, off of Vineyard, off of Southern. Now, I knew this building lived over that way, but I just didn't know the actual physical address. And so then I had my girlfriend Jackie take me back to her house. We got in my car, and we went to try to find the house. And so when we was coming down the street, we see the bus people standing out in front of the house on the carport. We happened to be his sister Carolyn, and all of them were standing out on the carport. And even my ex-wife was there with her new boyfriend. And when I seen them, I told her to stop the car. What had happened was Janice, when I told Janice what had happened, and I needed this Billy address, she called Miss Billy and told Miss Johnson that I told her that Todd was dead. Okay, in turn, Miss Johnson called her nephew, which is Michael Johnson, and asked him about it, and I guess, I don't know what happened after that, but when I pulled up and I got out of the car and was going to the carport, they all rushed me. His sisters and them told me, don't go in there, that Michael Johnson is inside the house. I said, what? She said, Michael Johnson is in. She said, Michael's in the house right now talking with moms, Miss Billy, you know, and told me that I need to get in my car and leave.
So what did you do?
Well, I got in my car and I left. Okay. And so I told Jackie to take me to my house, back to my apartment. At the time, I was living off of 16th Avenue Saguaro, right off of Peoria Avenue.
And then the police came and arrested you there?
Well, when I coming down the street to my apartment, Detective Gregory was already parked outside the apartment complex, and when I was coming up the street, I seen him coming from the, I guess, like from my apartment, crossing the street right in front of my car, you know, while I was coming, getting ready to pull into the driveway. So I told Jackie, keep on driving, because I didn't know what to do. I surely wouldn't go into the house and get arrested right there, because I was still trying to figure out why they wanted me, because at the time, I didn't understand the doctrine of felony murder. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And so I wondered why they were looking for me, and then I wondered how they even found my apartment. But then I found out my cousin Janice gave them my home phone number, because then nobody really know where I lived at. So again, Janice gave them my home phone number, and by being a homicide investigation, they went to U.S. West and got my address.
Okay.
And so we turned and we went back down Peoria to the freeway. We got on the freeway. They followed us, but they didn't light us up until we got on the freeway. We got on the freeway, they had Mark Houston light up the car and everything, and the helicopter, so I made a stop.
Right. Okay, sir. Well, boy, nobody can fault you for at all for your memory. You have a very, very clear memory of this event, and I understand how difficult it is to talk about it, sir. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have questions for you. Mr. Quinones has a question.
Thank you. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Hunter, can you hear me through?
Yes, sir.
I just have some questions. Who presided over your last hearing?
The Honorable Michael Johnson.
Okay. See, that already starts a problem right there, because he didn't. It was the Honorable Dr. Wright. And
well, he was the chairman, but Michael Johnson did all the speaking.
Sir.
Like, just like
your last hearing. The panel meeting with Dr. Wright, number one. Number two, I have to admit, I wasn't here for that hearing, but I had a tough time believing that Mr. Johnson would not let you speak. This hearing is about letting you speak. That's what we've just done. And you've given us quite a bit of information to take under consideration. So here's my questions. Did you state that you have or you do for an appeal?
Yes, sir, I did appeal.
Okay, and what was the result of that appeal?
They affirmed the conviction.
Okay. Now, we're not here to retry the case, but as I listen to your account, I think it's important to point out that just because someone saw you drop them off and leave does not mean that you weren't the getaway driver. Because it makes little sense to drop off two individuals who are going to commit an armed robbery with no exit strategy. I'm just telling you. The second thing is, you stated that you're an informant. Did you ever fill out any paperwork with the Phoenix Police Department registering as an informant?
At that time, I didn't know that I was required to do so. I just found out.
No. It's not a question of being required to do so. I'm asking you.
Right.
Did they register you?
That's what I'm saying. I didn't know that Detective Marvin was supposed to have registered me.
No.
Policy.
No. You're stating that he's supposed to register you. You would have had to have been involved in a process to be registered as a CI. He can't just register you. You have to agree to be an informant. It's a process. So, if you were an informant for that detective, what were you expecting in return?
Well, what he would do was when I get pulled over, and because I had suspended license, I would let the officer know that I was his informant, and they would go through the dispatch and contact him, and then he would confirm it, and they would release me and let me go ahead home. And a few times he took me up and judged our motor traffic class for me too, so I could get out of jail. I took a polygraph on that, and just last year, I had the results in my file right there to the board.
Actually, the bigger question would be, was there any evidence of him standing up for you in the courts for any past tickets?
Well, I wasn't at the hearings when he got one in the court. I don't have the evidence, no sir, other than the polygraph test that I took.
I think it's very convenient for you to state that you were informed.
Well, this is something that just came up now. I mean, I wrote letters to him the whole time, from 1995 all the way to 2008. I wrote him five different letters. They were all notarized, and I was asking him to come forth and straighten out his situation, but he would never respond to me. But all the copies of those letters are in my file. So this is something that I just come up with recently. I told my trial attorney and everything, but then my trial attorney, Michael Terry, the other trial, told me, well, because of this whole situation blew up, he's probably going to just wash his head clean up and don't look for him to come forth.
Thank you, Ms. Hunter. I appreciate it.
Any other questions? Dr. Light has a question for you, Mr. Hunter.
I kind of remember the hearing. I don't remember all the details that we've gone over today, but I kind of remember the hearing last year when we came before this board, and a bunch of the details that you've gone in today, I don't believe that they came out last year during the hearing. Now, this Detective Mullins, is he a real person?
Yes, he is, sir. It took me almost 20 years to find an investigator that I could afford, that was willing to search for him, that was working with the courts, that was certified.
And that's ANI company? That's a company,
yes,
that you
I'm sure he's even an interview Detective Mullins, but then when he interviewed Detective Mullins, I think Detective Mullins' interview was in there too. Mm-hmm. But when he interviewed him, Detective Mullins conveniently couldn't remember a lot of stuff and things like that. And so then, I guess just it took me a couple of years to figure out what to do after that. So in 18, that's when I decided to take a polygraph on everything. And I submitted 70-something questions to the investigator to have the polygraph examiner examine me on. The polygraph examiner, I had to pay for everything, and he came down into the prison, administered the test, and I passed it, and he missed it three times. And the results of that is in your file right there, too.
So where all this stand now? So I'm just trying to figure out, we can't retry nothing. That's not the responsibility of the court. I'm just trying to figure out, in your mind, where does all this stand now? You really going into details, true, false, whatever. And I appreciate, you're going into all this detail. But from your perspective, what does your situation stand at this particular moment, sir? Is Mr. Mullins, is Detective Mullins, is that history, Sergeant Mullins, is that history? So you don't, you can't deal with him anymore? So I'm just trying to figure out in your mind, and not that we can do anything about it, but in your mind, where does things stand today?
Where does it stand? Big base, in a nutshell, when I was 62 years old, I was just asking to be paroled to my second number. That's it, sir.
So you're not going to, I mean, this is none of my business, and this is none of the board's business, and the question I'm going to ask. So you're not going to pursue anything else with Detective Mullins, and that you're putting all that behind you at this point, sir. Am I correct, sir?
No, I'm not, sir. What I'm trying to do, I'm trying to get the money to hire an investigator to go out and interview 200 people that knew I was an informant for you. And then once I get that done, then I'm going to try to file back in court for a new trial.
And you don't have to, sir, the question I want to ask now, you don't have to give me the names, because I don't want to get involved, I don't want to get the board, and I don't want to get myself involved in any of that. But who's working? Is anybody working with you now, or are you just doing all this on your own now, sir?
Attorney-wise,
family-wise, or community-wise, anybody assisting you to, at this point, sir?
Well, my sister is, my 76-year-old sister, she's assisting them as far as,
paying for these, for the
investigations and stuff.
Okay. And what, I mean, and I'm not saying what I would even think as a board member, but all of this took place, you have it in your memory from back when. I think you said something to the effect, and this is not a quote from you, that some of this just came up last year, or something that started last year, year before last. So why is all this coming up at this point in time, sir?
What part are you talking about, sir?
I'm talking about the whole crime, or you know, and the whole details that you've given us this morning, which I don't think you gave us all this last year, but all this that you've given us this morning. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, when did you, I mean, I know this has been in, well, based on what you've been saying, I think this has been in your mind, you know, since the beginning. But when did this really become something that you said, I'm going to deal with at this time, sir?
Well, I've always maintained the same position, sir, even when I talked to my trial attorney back then. But then my trial attorney told me that don't look for him to come forward, that he's going to watch his hand clear. Then he told me, well, we don't need you anyway because they can't place you there. And we went on the trial, went to trial with that notion, and I got found guilty. And so immediately afterwards, when once I got to the prison, I started writing. I've been writing Detective Mullins since 1995. I think the first letters in there, I think I have two from 1995 in that file right there.
Yes, sir. I've seen all your letters. I've gone through it. I think I went through them last year, and I went back to them again the last day or two. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what...
I've never stopped fighting this. You get to some point, and then, you know, when you run to a brick wall, you don't know what to do, and then you have to, you know, take time and figure out what to do next. So like when I had him interview, one detective when I got interviewed, well, all of a sudden he has, you know, like amnesia. And so then after that, I didn't know what to do after that. It took me a year and a half to figure out what to do after that. And finally just came to me, well, take a polygraph on him. So then I had to write Mr. Reeves again and ask him, was there any kind of way I could do a polygraph and then everything. And he told me he could look into it. Then he wrote me back and said, yeah, that he could find an examiner that he wanted to come to the prison and administer the polygraph test. And so then that's what I did after that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got that result. Now I have that result, and now I'm trying to get two other people interviewed about Larry Reed before I even attempt to go back into court.
Okay, so, Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse, may I just ask one other question, and then I'm going to move on from this. I want to be careful how I ask this question, but I want to ask it in my way. I think that Honorable Mr. Cabanas has already alluded to it, but let me ask it my way. It seems to me that what you, and maybe I did not hear what you said, or I did not comprehend what you said. It seemed to me what you might have possibly said is that you feel in that somehow the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson was somehow, because of family connections, or somehow he was connected with this whole situation. You know, I mean, Honorable Mr. Johnson, of course, has served, as you know, on the Phoenix Police Department. He's served as a city councilman in the city of Phoenix, and he's currently on this board. He just happened not to be here today, which has nothing to do with you, this hearing today. But I'm just trying to figure out why did you raise his name, sir, in this whole at this particular time? I guess maybe you raised it last year. We'll have to go back and listen to the tape. But why are you raising his name at this time, sir?
Well, when I filled out my application last year, I wrote in my application and requested that he recuse himself. And then at the commencement of the hearing, like, I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, the ma'am that was just speaking, they started hearing. Okay, yes, Michael Johnson, he was the one, he asked you, sir, for permission to speak like that. And the first thing he said when he opened my file, he said, I see here that you asked me to accuse myself, and then he said, but I'm not going to do that. You know, in a nutshell, I don't remember those are the exact words, but he said something to that effect. And so then he went on with the regular hearing like she was doing, and then when I would ask the stuff, everything I would ask, he started attacking. Then he went talking about I wouldn't accept responsibility. Then he told me that Michael Johnson wouldn't, I mean, not Michael Johnson, but Detective Mullen would never do nothing like that. And that he known me, he worked with him and all that. And I mean, everything I said, he just attacked me on it. He used his position there to retaliate against me. It was like, I felt like I interfered here because, first of all, he's related to the victim and he's related to me.
You say he's related to you, though. What's your relationship? Y'all cousins or something? What's your relationship?
His father, Jack Johnson, is my first cousin.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you so much, Mr. Honey. You and commend you on your memory. I do ask that you have to do what you have to do, but those of us who work with Mr. Johnson, Michael Johnson in this case, not with Mr. Michael Johnson, we know a different side of the Honorable Mr. Johnson, but you know what you know from what you think you know, and so I just leave it at that, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Neal has a question for you, too, Mr. Hunter.
Yes, sir. I guess February 19th of 2018, you had a polygraph examination which was conducted by Thomas A. Bunch, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and in that test, according to the paperwork we have, the results of that test only show 14 questions. The first one is start of chart and the last one is end of chart, so there's only 12 questions. And there are some, do you live in the United States? Those are balancing questions.
Yes, sir.
You know, what they call irrelevant questions, but they check your responses to the stimulus on the machine. Anyway, the point is, as it goes through here, you know, you're talking about Mr. Mullen, or you being a confidential informant for Mr. Detective Mullen, which I have still, as much as I've heard, as much as I read, I don't quite get why that would exonerate you from these offenses, because question 7. On September 21st, 1991, did you drop Todd Johnson and David Hughes off in front of Randy's Liquor Barn on 19th Avenue and Corker Street so they could rob the store? And you answered yes, okay? Now, subsequent to that, it says you drove away. All right, fine, but you dropped them off at the store knowing they were going to rob the store. You didn't go tell the police, you didn't do anything to stop them, so, and they went in the store and they ended up getting killed. That alone says you're guilty of felony murder. Okay, irregardless of being a cop for informant, irregardless of the fact you drove away. You took them there, you dropped them off, you knew they were going to rob the store, they got killed, thus, and then that leads to your conviction. And the polygraph, you answered yes to that question. And that's the big question. You knew they were going to rob the store. You drove them to the store. You dropped them off at the store. So all this other stuff that you keep going through, and to me, it's no wonder that you have not won any appeals or anything, because whether or not you're a confidential informant does not allow you to let something go on without doing some kind of intervention or anything else like that. You knew they were going to rob the store. Being a confidential informant doesn't exonerate you from crimes that you committed. So I just don't understand the relevance of all this stuff that you're talking about now.
Okay, I can explain the relevance. First of all, in my appeals, I never raised none of this stuff because I just located Detective Mullen. I just did the polygraph test. But under Arizona Revised Statute 13-402, it's a section in there that states that when a reasonable person believes that he's assisting the officer in the performance of his duty. Okay, when Detective Miller made me his confidential informant, he never explained to me the guidelines of being a confidential informant. He never told me what I could do and what I couldn't do. But he always kept pushing. He told me that he wanted me to get closer to them and let him know when they actually go do a robbery or right after they do it. And at the time, when he asked me to drop him off, my intent was to go and call him. Right after I dropped him off, I went and I called him. I called his message, asked him to see if he didn't answer.
Okay, well, I don't know.
But under that statute, though, if a reasonable, that's something to be determined by a jury. If a reasonable person felt like that he was assisting them in the performance of his duty.
Okay, well,
that's what I felt I was doing.
Okay, that question is about that particular robbery that you were sentenced to prison for. There's several questions about some other people and another robbery crew that you supplied information to. And in the polygraph, there's several questions about them, but there's only two about that particular instance that you got.
So you want to have other questions?
Also, according to the paperwork we had during trial and everything, the issue was that you were came up with the idea to rob that store, and of course one of the victims was a juvenile, and helping him by driving him there as if there's other crimes, so, contributing to delinquency of minor and, all kinds of other things that you did that, whether you're a confidential informant or not, it's not legal. Okay, no further questions, sir. I have no further questions, sir.
Nobody ever testified that I came up with the idea of robbing this store, and I didn't testify at all.
The summary that I read says that you were the one that planned the robbery, and you took them to the robbery and you dropped them off, you were the driver, you dropped them off, knew they were going to do it, and that's the information I have.
That's what the state argued.
Okay, but the polygraph says that You admitted in the polygraph that you keep referring to the polygraph, but you admitted in the polygraph that you took them and dropped them off at the store knowing they were going to rob the store. That is in and of itself evidence that you, because they were murdered or killed, that you're guilty of felony murder. So I have no further questions.
Thank you. Any other, Mr. Munoz?
This is good, Paul. Thank you, Mr. Munoz. Mr. Hunter?
Yes, sir.
It's Louis Munoz again, and I just want to put something in context for me as one individual voting member. We do vote individually. We don't, the discuss these cases outside of this hearing room. If you are seeking justice through the courts regarding your case, that is your right, and just as a person, I would encourage anyone to do that, because I don't know what's in your heart or mind. I want to be careful with accusations, because I don't have all the facts. I don't know what happened with you personally. I do want to point out that I was trained in the management of performance and have a lot of experience in the subject matter. And the bottom line is registered informants, people that are actually handled by police or law enforcement officers, commit crimes behind the backs of their handlers all the time. And it is not a get out of crime free pass. They're prosecuted for those cases. So I just want to put in context, I'm not defending Detective Mullins, because I don't know the facts regarding his relationship with you either, but it certainly wouldn't be a question of anyone washing their hands of it. Informants do crime behind the backs of their handlers all the time, and they get prosecuted for it. So I'm just putting that in context. Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Hunter, we're coming toward the end of your hearing, but I want to give you an opportunity. Tell this board why it is that you believe that we should parole you to your next consecutive sentence.
Well, I understand. I realize there are two people that are there, you know. Johnson and David Hughes, you know. And I feel a little bad about that. I'm sorry for that, you know. And I feel like that I deserve, you know, some type of penance for it, you know. But I didn't feel like that I deserved to get two life sentences for it, because I wasn't a part of it. I mean, even though I dropped them off, I didn't plan that robbery. Robbies and my style is what I had never, on my whole record, nothing like that on my record. No convictions like that on my record, nowhere. This is my thing, you know? And I wouldn't have been a part of that robbery like that. If I'd understood the doctrine of felony murder, I'd have never even dropped them off. Even though they would have got there anyway on their own, they'd have found a way. But the reason why I dropped them off, because my intent was, like I said, okay, I'll drop them off and I'll go call Detective Mullins, because he wanted to find it. He told me that he know when they was robbing something so they can roll up on them and catch them with the proceeds still, if not in the act. But on the flip side of that, like I said, I've served almost 26 years. And even for arguing those things, even if I had been the getaway driver, okay, which I wasn't, you know, guys have come to me with way worse crimes than that. You know, they need their first parole boards and stuff. You know, for instance, Mr. Huff, Naomi Winfrey, Harry Washington, these guys that I was locked up with, you know, during that time here. And I've seen the disciplinary records and all that. I know them personally. And this is my second board here. And all requests, I'm 62 years old, you know what I'm saying? I'll probably die in here. I'll probably be 80-something, because if I have to do the whole 25 again, I'll be like 86 or 87 now, since I had to wait a whole other year to appear before you again. I'll be 87 years old, so I probably won't make it out of here. But, you know, I'm just requesting being paroled to my second number. You're not paroling me to freedom or nothing. I'm just asking to be paroled to my second number.
Okay, Mr. Hunter, thank you for that statement. Mr. Hunter, you probably remember from last time that the board does its discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law, so we just ask that you remain on the phone, listen to the discussion, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Okay, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. The board's now in discussion. Well, this is certainly an interesting case, and I do appreciate, and I did not know what Mr. Quinones shared about being a registered informant, and it appears that it's possible that this was a situation where that wasn't strictly followed, and this is the kind of thing that happens when you don't follow what you're supposed to follow. You know, it's more complicated by the relationship with Mr. Johnson, and it's just been an interesting case. Also, I think Mr. Hunter is very articulate. He certainly has an excellent memory of what happened, and I don't believe he's lying about that. I think everything he told us is the truth of what happened that day. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to remember all those facts. And what he presented at the end, his behavior in prison has been good. Certainly his criminal history was not good. But once he got to prison, his behavior straightened out. And as he just pointed out, he will be, when he finishes this next life sentence, he'll be 87 or so if we paroled him today. So I am, you know, I could be open, I could be, I just would like to have some other discussion from fellow board members on this. Mr. Quinones?
Certainly respect your position. I'm concerned about the accountability piece regarding the case itself. It makes it a little difficult for me to support going to the next consecutive sentence when there are so many roles in the story and we all have accountability. Now, this is not to say that I would expect someone who was wrongly convicted to admit to something that they knew. I would never expect that of anyone. I would expect them to pursue justice. And I hold that process sacred. But as one of the board member, I still have to take the case at face value as fact. Because we're not here to retry the case. So it's the accountability that I'm struggling with. But I'm not fiercely opposed to you.
Right.
That's wrong. Hand it off.
Mr. Dale?
Well, I have difficulty with the accountability issue. Mr. Hunter's not denying that he dropped him off, but he keeps going back to what I interpret as Mr. Quinones called it, a get out of free card, get out of jail free card, because he was a confidential informant. And even if we can verify, if Detective Martin stood right here in front of the board and said, oh yes, he was my informant, that was not exonerating from the convictions. And one of the people that it seemed like he thinks that he's being handled by Detective Martin so he can handle these other guys. And he took him to the store, he dropped him off, and one was a juvenile. And I just don't think his accountability is there, because it would be, you know, for what he was committed for. Even if Detective Martin said, yes, he's my confidential informant, but this is not exonerating from these charges, and that troubles me enough that I wouldn't be in favor of a further next consecutive sentence at this time. Okay. Thank you.
That's correct.
I think, you know, the purpose of this hearing is, should he be paroled to his next consecutive sentence? Is there enough evidence, enough information for me as a board member to say, hey, he should go to his next consecutive sentence? I know that we've had a long, profound discussion today. Some we got off track. I know that, and I am indeed sorry that a Broughton's name was used today, and with that Broughton not being in the room, that does concern me very much, so that we, but we don't want to give any misinformation, anything that could be construed by anyone. This board is not fair to anyone who come before this board, and I just think that at this point, regardless of where we stand at this particular point, I am not at this particular moment prepared to say that he should go to his next consecutive sentence. I really think that we really, let me not say we, I really think that I would want to have some more time to really go back through this, all of this paperwork again. You know, I understand what he's saying, but I'm puzzled by the fact that we find ourselves, a board member's name being used and he's not in the room. And I just feel that that's not fair at this particular time. That's all I'm going to say at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. And the other thing is that I was going to point out is we've certainly interviewed other people in his exact spot. Well, not exact, but was the, all they did was drop the person off at the, who committed the crime, and that driver dropped him off and drove away, and that driver is serving on the felony murder. So we have at least one and probably more that I can remember. So it's not an unusual position for someone to be in. All right, thank you for the discussion. I appreciate that from board members. I'm going to make a motion then, and my motion will be that we deny 412B or absolute discharge for Mr. James Hunter, and based on the date of the crime, that we request a one-year set-off.
Second.
Agree.
Okay, motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Quinones. Agreed, Dr. Wright and Mr. Neal. And release type denied is 412B, a consecutive sentence, and 411. Reasons for denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious bodily injury, multiple victims, prior criminal history. I'm not going to check for institutional behavior because the last discipline were minors in 14. That's 5 years ago, and they were minors. So I think he is doing very well in that. And we have new letters, you know, as I mentioned to him earlier in the hearing, from his family, which we certainly would welcome those. So I'm going to check no family or community support system. Is there anything else that board members would include? Okay, thank you. Back to you, Mr. Hunter. Mr. Hunter, the board has voted to deny your parole at this time, sir. The Department of Corrections will certify you in about a year to come back before the board again, sir. Did you hear the reasons for denial?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much for appearing today, and we look forward to seeing you in about a year, sir. Thank you very much. If you give the phone down or give it back to the CO3, thank you.